my favorite. They say the thing, like, they say the name of the movie, and the movie is from First Contact. It's Zefram Cochrane. Like, what are you people, flying through space on some kind of Star Trek?
They said it. There it is. They said it.
They said it. They said the thing.
We haven't said anything funny for the mic check. Today's a good day to pod.
Pod people. Pod people.
No, the correct answer was kaplot. Do you even watch Star Trek?
Never heard of it. What kind of Trek amongst the stars? Some kind of Star Trek? No, I've never seen it.
Let's do this.
Welcome, dear listener, to the QQ Cast. Today is Thursday, oh my god, at the new month, May 2nd, 2024. And we're your host on the pod, Zach Mayer. Say, where's Ruli?
He's gone. Gone forever. Taken by the void.
Until, like, next week.
Well, or the week after, I think.
Oh, god damn that guy. And this, dear listener, is Quest 326. Should we review Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4? Zach, should we?
Nope. We're done.
All right, dear listener, thank you so much for joining us. Bye! That bit never gets old, at least to me.
It never does.
So, Zach,
You know what else is never old? Season 4 of Lower Decks. Oh, it's so good.
So good.
It's yeah. So good.
So, Zach, I have you to thank for making me watch Lower Decks every time I visit, and you really do get me hooked, and I really do appreciate it, because depression is a bitch when it's like preventing you from doing fun things. And so thank you for always giving me that nudge. The first hit is free on the Paramount Plus app, and then they want you to pay, but they still want you to watch ads anyway because they suck. Way to not put your best foot forward, right? Like, just here, have this trial. We're gonna feed you with ads during the trial. It's like, guys, you're really putting a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a real fucking problem.
So it was recently announced that Lower Decks, I think we said this in QQ News already, Lower Decks Season 5 will be the final season of the Lower Decks. But as the showrunner said, every season really was a gift. And goddamn, was that true.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we know when Season 5 is coming out? It's got to be like end of this year.
Well, I'm right here on the old Wikipedia, so let's find out,
I think they usually start in, like, November.
Yeah.
September
through September. November for Season 4, 23. So, this...
Yeah, and that about tracks for Season 3 and Season 2. So, yeah, okay, cool. So
late 24.
Yeah, late 24.
Yep.
That's not that far away, though.
Oh, God, I can't believe we're halfway through. We're almost halfway through this year. It's insane.
It's, like, 4 months away.
Yeah. Jesus.
It's a quarter. Wait, no. It's
no,
a little
that's
more
two
than a quarter.
It's half a year away.
You're a half a year away.
Yeah, so let's do this. Let's roll on through Lower Decks Season 4. So there's 10 episodes. Do you just want to talk about, like, look, spoilers, dear listener. Both Zach and I are going to put this at a 4 out of 4. We like it and we think you will too. So that's the QQ Review Scale version 2. No shit. I basically don't have anything to complain about the whole season. So I just want to talk about the 10 episodes in order. I feel like that's the easiest way to do this.
Honestly, yeah. Let's just go through them. They're all good in their own special way.
All right.
Let's see.
Overall episode 31 is Tuvix, spelled T-W-O. Get it? Get it?
Yeah. Get it? I get it.
So this was great because it opens up with the decommissioned USS Voyager having been fully restored, being shipped off to Earth to be theoretically, I guess, timeline wise, to be put into Geordi's little museum collection. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, so we're basically getting a run through of all the greatest hits of Voyager seasons. It's kind of like what did the episode in Voyager? I think it was like one of the last season episodes where Chakotay moves through the eras of Voyager. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Oh, and fun fact, they did a really similar thing in both Next Gen and Discovery. So that, like, time skip, revisit the past and see the deadly future of the protagonist ship.
I knew that of
kind
Disco
of a thing.
Because I saw a screenshot, but I didn't. I don't know any of the spoilers. Which episode are you? Are you just talking about the finale, All Good Things for TNG?
Yeah.
Fucking fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's they All Good Things. All Good Things was so good.
It was
that it couldn't just not be redone. It's like, you know, the hallway scene in Old Boy. The fight scene.
Well, everyone knows that. I mean, watched Old Boy. Everyone knows that fucking scene.
Of course they do. It's All Good Things. All Good Things.
Right. Look, I, you know, it is a bit indulgent, but at the same time, I really have no problem with a series doing effectively a victory lap in their last season of let's celebrate ourselves, self-flagellate a little bit. It's like, guys, you know what? You did 7 seasons of television. You fucking earned a little indulgence. Have fun. So Disco's on its last season and did that. I think Voyager was on its last season and did that. By definition, what we're talking about here, which kind of sort of was the progenitor, TNG did that with All Good Things. So this isn't that. This is, we're going to do the greatest hits of Voyager. We're going to do a hardcore Voyager episode. So as the ship is being flown back to Earth, all sorts of shenanigans like, oh no, a plant was left in there, or a hologram was left in there, or a Borg, you know, a Borg device was left in there. And so, of course, they're just reliving all the fucking greatest hits and the holograms of characters.
The Neelix cheese.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Everything. And that shit, you point at the Neelix cheese. A lot of the most absurd things in Voyager. Like, how could a chip be destroyed by cheese? A lot of the most absurd things are coming back.
Yes. Yes.
The macrovirus.
The whole the bioneural circuitry of Voyager. The ship that can get, like, sick.
Right.
It's hilarious in retrospect. It was a really cool concept when it, like, originally aired.
Yeah. Well, but that is so emblematic of Voyager, though. As you and I have discussed, it's the series that just never lived up to its potential, that had this really cool, like, series Bible kickoff and then said, hey, take everything that's cool about this and forget about it. And so, yeah, the biomechanical components could have been cool. Instead, like, there were 3 times in the show where there were plot MacGuffins. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
That was all it was.
Yeah, no, like, they were like, oh, hey, you know what? Borg, they love biology and technology. We're going to have them, like, assimilate the ship and upgrade it and shit.
That'd have been cool.
That was their whole thing in, like, the last season.
Well, they kept bringing on more Borg tech. Then the next episode, it would be gone. Like, oh, the warp core module burnt out. Or, oh, this was incompatible with a thing. Or, there was always excuses.
They did some deflector bullshit when they were fighting, like, Species 8472. And then, I think in the last season where they were doing transwarp conduit shit,
yep,
they had more Borg bits and greebles all over them.
Sounds about right.
But that was always their, like, go-to if they're like, hey, we need to integrate Borg technology. Well, of course we can do that better than any ship in Starfleet because we've got bioneural circuitry. It's totally compatible. The Borg love it. It's like Borg catnip.
Okay, hold on. Fuck this. We need to talk about 2 picks. This was great, though, because it resurrected the meme of, you know, Janeway murdered Tuvok, right? Tuvix.
Tuvix. Yeah, she absolutely did.
And it is a straight up murder. Everyone else is complacent except the doc, who's like, I won't do it. And she's like, stand down. So apparently the most moral person on the ship is the hologram. Good job, Robert Picardo. So anyway, this, though, once again, doing what Lower Decks does best, it flips it on its head. How do they solve the Tuvix problem in this? As soon as people realize, they look through Janeway's logs, and they say, how did they solve this? Oh, God, she murdered them. So what's the good old Cerritos solution to this problem?
Well, first, when what was the first one's name? The doctor and
it's Shax and the doctor. I don't remember what their names are, though.
No, it wasn't Shax. Because Shax has that moment where he's like, so how much do you remember from before? it's T'Vanna and Billups.
Yeah, I'm looking at the synopsis and it's not telling me the names. So go on. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Tillips, that was it. I'm Dr. Tillips, and I love being alive.
as you do.
Yeah. Yeah, as you do. But no, of course, when they go through the logs, they're like, how did they solve this problem on Voyager? Oh shit, they just straight up killed a dude. Tillips gets all Tillipsy. And starts making hybrids. starts making more hybrids. Everybody's a hybrid. Can't kill them all. Can't do it.
So they can't. They can't kill them all. So what do they do
they
instead?
Can't kill them all. Instead, they end up in a meatball. And at that point, when it's a non-sentient blob of flesh, yeah, suddenly it's okay to separate them out.
Which they actually do by using their like personality traits. I love, again, poking fun at Voyager's techno battle,
yeah.
Right? Like, how can we get them apart? Mm-hmm. Personality traits. Like, you know what? This whole thing is goofy, and I love it. I love it. It's literally it's tongue-in-cheek, totally poking fun at itself.
They used it as such an adorable little hook for, shit, what's her name?
Yeah, who is the new Vulcan?
Tendi and T'Valla?
Is that
Something
who it
like
is?
That?
Yeah, so this is our new character. She had shown up in season 3, in, like one of the best episodes of 3, I think like the Lower Decks episode. Mm-hmm. She's the Vulcan who got kind of banished to Starfleet. So this is kind of the premiere of our new character. Goddamn, is she hilarious.
Yeah. So let's see. I need to know her name. Lower Decks Vulcan. T'Len. T'Len.
T'Len.
That's
all right.
It. Yeah. So yeah, no, T'Len and Tendi. They're science buddies. Science besties. Because they had to work together to separate out the meat blob, and like Vulcan logic meets Tendi's empathy powers of knowing who people are by their personality traits, I guess.
Which I, by the way, as much as I love the quartet of the main characters in Lower Decks, adding the Vulcan, what is her name?
T'Vana.
T'Vana. Adding T'Vana.
T'Len. T'Len. T'Len.
T'Len. God damn T'Len. It. Adding T'Len is so great because now we finally
have
a straight man.
T.
Right? Like, we don't have a straight character until now. We're just going to do monotone jokes and it's going to be fucking hilarious. I believe the answer is Cerritos Strong. It's just so good.
Yep.
All right. And of course,
absolutely.
This ends with a cliffhanger. What happens?
Oh, gosh. What did happen at the end of episode 1? It's actually been a while since I've seen it.
So it's basically the thing that happens at the start of every other episode. So season 4 has a running, I wouldn't even call it a subplot, because it's not even a subplot, but it has a running little set of stingers where at the end of this, a Klingon ship gets attacked by an unknown vessel and seemingly destroyed. And basically every episode for the rest of the season opens with a cold open, where we see another starship. Again, we get a bit of a Lower Decks peek, and then the ship gets destroyed. So, segue into season 2, a Romulan ship opens and gets destroyed. So this is setting up our little tiny, not quite a story for Lower Decks season 4. And I gotta say, I really appreciate this. You know, I don't much care for the disco every season we chase a MacGuffin, but that tiny little hint of continuity is fun, is nice. And so this is, again, I wouldn't even call it a subplot. It just... It all pays off
right
in the last episode, but...
Yes.
All right,
no, I remember now, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, we get to episode 2. I have no bones, yet I must flee. With the... I think this... Is this introducing maybe the cutest character since the Tribble? Is there anything cuter than this?
Was this the one with the exocomp?
No, this is not the...
No.
No, this is not the exocomp.
Then which one are you talking about?
So some humans were stuck in a menagerie. Again, making fun of TOS with the menagerie. And so they're Starfleet citizens or Federation citizens. So the Cerritos is going to this menagerie to rescue these 2 humans from, or like basically extradite, not really fight or rescue. These 2 humans off the menagerie. And then something goes wrong.
Moopsie. Yes, no, the Moopsie is... fantastic. It's a bone vampire. It drinks your bones.
But it's so cute. And it says one
so
thing.
It's so cute. Moopsie.
Moopsie. Oh, this one's my favorite.
Absurd.
It's so cute. Oh, God, get out of here. It's, it's kind of lovely.
Yeah. No, that was super adorable. And it turns out that the humans in the menagerie let the Moopsie free, so then they... leave the humans in the menagerie. Another starship will come along and pick you up.
Yep. And the subplot going on here is that everyone gets promoted at the end of season 4. Arguably one of the reasons that Lower Decks will come to an end. I don't think it's the real reason, but concluding the Lower Decks-esque part of the story. So the subplot here that is also running, this is the more important subplot running throughout the series, is that Is Mariner intentionally trying to get herself demoted? And so, is she the one that let out the moopsie? Does anyone believe her when she says that she didn't? And then, as you said,
yeah.
What a twist is that she didn't. But
what a twist. Oh, this has one of my favorite Rutherford moments, though. I remember this now.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten this was a subplot.
Because, yeah, B-plot was everybody got, like, promoted to, was it, Lieutenant Junior Grade or something?
Yep.
Except for Rutherford, because at the end of the season, three, I guess?
Yeah, he got his memories reset or something. Season two, I think.
He got his memories reset. They did a whole bunch of stuff. They saved the like, make-believe magic ship. Anyway, yeah, now everybody but Rutherford gets a promotion to Lieutenant Junior Grade, the least important mid-grade officers. So this whole time, Rutherford is like, I'm going to get promoted, because if I don't get promoted, I can't hang out with my best friend, Tendi, which is, you know, adorable on the face of it. But he's doing all of these things, and he develops this rivalry with a character who's never been introduced before.
Nope. Again, such a wonderful trope they're making fun of.
It's, the yeah,
new
exactly.
guy
it's
a rival.
Just, yeah, and it's one-sided. It's hilarious. But then at the end, like, he's been banging his head up against the wall, and he finally, like, gives up, and Tendi's there, and she's like, hey, can Rutherford have a promotion for the time that he saved the ship, that he saved Voyager with Neelix cheese? And the guy's like, yeah, of course. Of course.
just throws
the pip at him. Like, wow, it turns out you can just ask for the things you deserve.
Yeah, that's like one of my best, my favorite lines. So good. Oh.
I love it because, like, a lot of Star Trek episodes have some kind of message that they're trying to convey, and that's all the way back to the original series. Most of the time, they're fairly obvious, but that was just so on the nose that he just comes out and says the thing.
It's
wow,
so great.
Turns out you can just ask for what you deserve. Oh.
No, again, it's why I love Lower Decks. They are lovingly poking fun at Star Trek, kind of tongue-in-cheek,
mm-hmm.
but they are much more directly often just making fun of TV tropes that aren't Star Trek specific. And so it's just coming at you with the right and the left. Like, it's just always so goddamn funny.
Yep. Oh, very good.
All right. Season three, In the Cradle of Vexilon. Actually, I did not recognize that from the description. There's that idyllic, you know, engineered planet that, like, the weather is going out of control and they have to, like, figure out how to reboot the main computer. So the main story, or the A-plot is Captain Freeman trying to reset the ship. But then the B-plot is, and this is, I didn't remember this until I read it, the B-plot is Mariner and Tendi and Rutherford getting hazed by, or they think they're getting hazed, having to scan all the microchips.
Yes.
So,
mm-hmm.
This, again, I think every single episode this season is really good. If we're stack ranking, I'm not going to stack rank this one at the top. But I do like the Boimler plot in this. So,
absolutely. Because he's figuring out how to be a lieutenant. He's leading his first away mission. He's got the ensigns that just a couple of weeks ago, he was one of them. And now he's supposed to lead them?
So he's just doing all the work. Like, here, let me show you how to do one or two or three or four. And then just does, like, all the work for them. And they're upset by this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, again, the cliche, classic, hilarious. He has to learn to trust them and let them do their own stuff so that they can all switch out the pieces. Yes, that's a lot of fun. The hazing has a dark turn. What is the dark turn on the hazing? Is it the move along home game that the dude gets trapped in? Do you remember?
Yes. I don't remember what the game was called, but yeah, no, it traps you in an alternate dimension where you have to solve stupid puzzles in order to get out. And yeah, no, they think they're being hazed by the guy that ordered them to scan all the isolinear chips on the ship, apparently. And so to get payback, they set up this elaborate trap in the guy's quarters involving, like, tripwire and a Betazoid gift box and that.
It is Chula. It's the game from DS9's Move Along Home. One of the worst episodes of DS9.
So bad. And so yeah, they set this all up and they run into him like outside his quarters right before he's about to go in and set this trap off. And he's like, I can't get in tight spaces. And they say, all right, part of healing is acceptance. I got trapped in a move along home game or the Chula game for 3 months when I was a kid. I was too dumb to solve the puzzles, and breaks down crying. So they have to distract him while they take the puzzle, like they take the trap apart. Rutherford sets it off, gets stuck in the game, solves it super quick because it's Rutherford,
Rutherford, right?
and then is, they
They undo
dismantle
it,
him
but
and
they
it's all good.
almost get revenge on a guy who didn't deserve it. They're making poking fun at
But
DS9.
that wasn't the real twist.
What's the real twist? I don't
The
remember.
real t the real twist was right at the end, where the guy that was at ordering them to scan all the chips is talking to second officer's name,
Ransom?
Handsome, Ransom, Ransom. And he's like, yeah, I told them that I got stuck in a Chula game for 3 months. It was hilarious.
Oh God, the triple reversal. I fucking love
I
it.
love
I've
hazing new I
forgotten.
love
I've
hazing new
forgotten.
lieutenants. Yeah.
So
Oh,
again,
but
another great episode, even though again I compared everything in the season, I wouldn't stack rank it high. All the episodes are great. Like everything in this season is great.
it has one of my favorite Boimler lines.
Oh, what's that?
All right, guys, Talin says I gotta put your lives in danger, so let's do this.
Oh man. Oh,
So good.
okay, moving on. Episode four, something borrowed, something green.
Oh, this is the Orion wedding.
Yeah, and so this opens up with the Orion ship getting assaulted. So again, that little subplot keeps running. So Tindy is getting summoned to go to her sister's wedding, I think. And
Something
so
like that, yeah.
Mariner and Talan are gonna go along with her. Oh, again, just making fun of tropes. I don't remember what the B plot is. I'm sure I'll get to that in a second. But so basically, yeah, like Orion culture is super secretive, which is half true in Trek because TOS loved to talk about how they were just sex slaves effectively.
Well, slavers, pirates, I mean, they were sort of a Swiss Army knife of antagonist tropes. So, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, but then through a whole bunch of shenanigans, it's kind of revealed that Tindy is actually like a princess, and the first child in every house was supposed to actually become like some badass assassin or something. So because she left, the sister had to become the assassin, and she never forgave Tindy to it. So the classic trope, she kidnapped herself to draw in Tindy. Like, it's again, it's every cliched warrior princess trope layered on top of each other. But it is fun because the whole time you have Mariner and Talin following along, and Mariner's trying to not do anything crazy and realize. And meanwhile, Talin is just recording everything, going, "Ah, fascinating. Oh, so this is what a family squabble is like. Ah, okay."
Yeah.
Like, it's just so funny.
Well, and then it's so wholesome because she's like, whoops, I lost my pad. On wink wink
Like,
accident.
it was okay. And actually, reading over this, this actually introduces one of the best. It's not quite a running joke, but it is a recurring joke with Mark Twain on the holodeck. I had forgotten this was the subplot or the B plot, sorry. Oh my God.
Oh, that's right.
Boimler and
Boimler and
Rutherford. So,
Rutherford are
yeah,
roommates.
the lower deckers finally now have quarters, but they have to share. And so, Boimler, Rutherford, and our roommates, they get along really well until what do they fight about, Zach?
The misting schedule for their bonsai.
Yeah, who gets to use the mister on the bonsai tree? So that's what they fight about. And so how do they settle their differences? Well, of course, they go to the holodeck. I think they were going to do a Mark Twain like mystery or something, but they both show up as Mark Twain. And so they're both pissed at
Yep.
each other. And they end up arguing for hours until finally it just resolves itself, Zach. Something about getting into that there Mark Twain accent.
Oh yeah, no, and it's fantastic. Yeah, they adopt these persona, or they both adopt the Mark Twain persona and come to an amicable arrangement, which they reasonably believe is a perfectly generic solution to conflict. So they try it with the alien guy that was all pissed off.
Oh yeah,
Does not work.
God, I forget what alien that was. Yeah, and this is again the B plot of people ha of this happening on the Cerritos. Yeah, and so they bring him in like, "Oh yeah, this will work great." And then it doesn't. He just gets pissed off as fuck and leads to a brawl.
Yeah, but I mean, it does ultimately resolve the conflict because the guy gets to eat the
Is that
bonsai.
true? Forgotten that too.
So,
Oh God.
you know, it's fine.
Oh, again, if any of this sounds tropey, it's because it is. It's because they're making fun of it, and it's fucking hilarious.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Moving on. The next one is empathological fallacies. So, a trio of Beta Zeds, very younger Lwaxana Troi inspired, come on board the ship. Again, classic TNG trope. Everyone starts letting out their emotions and acting weird. Some people are angry, and some people are having fun, and some people are horny. Again, how many different times has that happened on, well, basically all the Star Treks, but it happened multiple fucking times on TNG.
Yep. No, basically every time that Lwaxana showed up, everybody goes haywire for whatever reason.
Well,
yeah.
and like they do this as well with in the episode named Sarek, the eponymous Sarek shows up with Bendai syndrome, can't control himself, his emotions pour out in everybody else. And so yeah, everyone thinks that the Betazoids are the source of the problem, and they all start fighting each other. And then the Betazoids end up being there. They were like undercover trying to figure out why all the starships are disappearing right at the start of the episodes. Is that, am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, well, yes, that's their mission. They are the Betazoid intelligence, right?
There you
And
go.
so they're wandering around trying to figure out what's been going on with the missing ships. They're undercover as party girls, and they're really just like hitching a ride on the Cerritos. That's their whole deal. They weren't there for any particular reason beyond being transported. But yeah, no, they're keeping their cover, and then yeah, they get accused of having Bendai syndrome, or whatever it was, for Betazoids. Same idea. Turns out, wasn't them.
Dun, dun, dun. Who was it?
It was T'Lyn. She was so stressed about not being able to contact her Vulcan High Command to get reassigned back to the Vulcan fleet that yeah, she just kind of had a little Vulcan version of a mental breakdown and made
Aww.
it everybody else's problem.
But then what does she decide at the end once she's regained her composure?
By the transitive property, she too must be Vulcan as fuck. Vulcan as a motherfucker. That was it. Sarek had it, and he's Vulcan as a motherfucker. Well, by the transitive property. Yeah. Mariner, wow, turns out talking about your feelings is way better than repressing them into a dark space inside your soul. Yeah, no, it's good.
It's a fun episode. Yeah, and there's also there's a subplot about Boingler trying to relax with the security folks, and I know that has another great little like kind of again like cheesy moment at the end with Shaxs of being like, we're here not just to protect you, physically. We're also here to protect your mental well-being.
I love
just
that philosophy
great.
though. Like the Starfleet security, they're not, yeah, they're there for the well-being of the crew, the whole well-being of the crew.
They're trying to give them like
Why can't I
painting and
read you?
clay and poetry slams and
Your mind is so calm, I can't read you. Slam poetry.
So, the last thing I'll say on this episode is I think the funniest recurring bit to me is whatever the name of the bird psychologist is, the bird counselor, his way of,
Miglimo.
huh?
Miglimo.
Miglimo.
Dr. Miglimo.
His way of getting pissed off from the Betazoids is he's just kind of picking a fight with a replicator that keeps pouring water on it. Just keeps cutting
I
back to him
said
screaming at it.
regurgitated soup. This tastes like it's hardly been in my mother's mouth.
Oh, dude, it's fucking hilarious. Okay, we are halfway through, so Zach, you know what that means. After these messages, we'll be right back. Our shit. I was gonna take a turn, and all of a sudden I went blank. Our sponsor this evening is, I can't say Paramount. That's too obvious. I can't say Nostalgia Studios. What did I buy anything recently? I'm
What
bad
was
at
the name
this.
of this? No, hang on, hang on, hang on. I've got this. I've got this. Hang on, hang on. Oh, yeah, here we go. Sluggo Cola. Brought to you by Sluggo Cola. It's addictive.
No, Slurm is Futurama. Which one is Sluggo?
Yes. Sluggo is the cola on the Ferengi homeworld in the next episode.
Oh, what a segue. What a fucking segue.
What a fucking segue. I could have also gone with Pog and Dar, Cop Landlords. Now okay. On Paramount Plus.
So this episode opens up with a Ferengi ship getting wasted, and then... why are we going to Ferenginar again? Is it because of the Ferengi ship?
No. That's just a trade agreement. The Ferengi are looking to join the Federation.
Ah, okay. They're claiming for reasons. So, yeah, this is a throwback episode. We had DS9 in the previous season, and this is a throwback episode where we have Rom and Lita, voiced by Chase Masterson and, oh my god, what is the name of the guy who played Rom? He's great. Son of a bitch. I'm usually really good at this stuff. Max Grodenschek.
Yeah, that's him.
So reprising their roles as Rom and Lita. Rom is now the Grand Nagus. And I gotta admit, this was one of the gags that I did think was kind of weak. They're playing it that Rom, who always has been the dumb, happy person, is like now trying to be the ruthless Nagus. And so Lita's kind of like acting like she's, you know, trying to be reasonable for him and playing it. I gotta admit, that was a pretty weak bit to me. I don't know. I'm gonna be fair. I'm gonna criticize some things. I love these characters. It's great to see them again. But this bit was a bit weak.
Yeah, I mean, the resolution to it was kind of fun, but it was also just really super contrived and the kind of thing that you can see coming from a mile away. Because, like, the Ferengi are genuinely interested in joining the Federation, but their whole bit is making sure that they can't, that they're not tying themselves to a bunch of, what do they say, suckers and rubes. you swindled like a true Ferengi. I did love the contract. They were like, yeah, you'll get a billion latinum as a signing bonus. All you have to do is bring in one planet. And they're like, hi, you know how many planets owe us money? Of course we can bring in one more planet. And they're like, don't worry, they don't get anything. What are you talking about? Oh, you didn't read the fine print. You gotta bring in Kronos, the Klingon homeworld. Oh, very fun.
The swindlers got like swindled. Oh, how classic.
So and meanwhile, Scammer gets scammed.
So meanwhile, the B-plot of this is Ransom assigns people to go on vacation down on Ferenginar. So Mariner goes down there. What the hell is her subplot of this?
Oh, she gets in bar fights. She's meeting up with her, I guess, old Ferengi friend. I've forgotten his name now.
Wimp. I only know that because it's on the summary right here.
Ah, well, there you go. So, you know, she's getting into fights and being all aggressive, and they have a little bit of a heart-to-heart, but yeah, that's kind of it.
So the other subplots here are Boimler has like this, you know, Boimler has this super thorough sightseeing agenda where every minute's accounted for, he's going to say all these things, and then he ends up like learning what daytime TV is and just binge watches Ferengi TV the whole time. It just keeps cutting back to him doing that, which, again, cliched trope, but with Boingler doing it and some of the lines, it's very fucking funny.
Oh, absolutely. The best bit is the resolution of that, where he's like on the floor of his hotel room, wrapped in a blanket with a bunch of Sluggo colas sitting around him, staring mindlessly at the screen. He gets the call from Ransom. It's like, hey, Mr. Boimler, do you need assistance? Did you do too many activities? No, I sat and watched bad TV for 8 straight hours. I'm proud of you. You really managed to relax and cut yourself some slack. Now, I've authorized the local authorities to come in and drag you out of there. Just go limp and don't resist.
Final subplot is Rutherford and Tendi have to pose as a married couple, and they... it's awkward and they can't do it. So then they get like thrown out of, I don't know, some hotel and blah, blah, blah. Again, one of the weaker bits. Cause you know, it's the friends and are the friends gonna, you know, fall in love. And again, one of my favorite things about Lower Decks is aside from one episode about Boingler dating and aside from, a couple episode, again, somewhat subplot where Mariners is dating another girl on the ship, which is great. Cause it's, LGBT representation that is not overt, is not in your face, and is literally never even referenced. She's like, oh yeah, cool, go see your girlfriend. Aside from that, there is no romance on Lower Decks. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves in this day and age, is that people always have to make the fucking main characters fucking ship off and get together. And so I'm glad, again, they were playing with that. They're kind of making fun of that. But it's one of the things that, like, I'm actually really glad isn't on the show. And it made this part of the subplot more annoying to me. So now that we've been talking through this episode, this might be the low point of the season for me, actually. We'll see. I don't totally remember. And again, I'm not saying it's bad. I like every single fucking episode in this fucking season. I'm just saying it's the low point, which is still great.
And I mean, it's got some really, like, little one-off lines and quotes. Now, Mr. Grand Nagus, just Nagus, sorry, Nagus, Grand Nagus.
Okay.
fucking Miglimo. Can I interest you in our homewrecker package? Oh, you don't have to throw up in my mouth twice. Let's do it.
God damn it. You are better at quoting this shit than I am Simpsons. Good fucking Lord. Okay, and now we get back to a classic recurring character, a few badgies more. So I don't know what fucking race this is. The Drukamai scavenger ship has found Rutherford's rogue AI badgie. So what happens here?
Let's see. This is the Binars get it. Which is always funny to see, because Binars are just inherently hilarious.
They were just a throwaway in one TNG season. Is it one episode or season two? Maybe season two episode. Does Riker have the beard
yet?
I think it's season one.
I don't know. They were so weird and dumb, but I love them.
Primary plot of the episode is Riker wants to fuck a hologram, which is then referenced in the awesome Admiral episode where it's his wife. It's so good. Go on.
Anyway, yeah, so, ships are still mysteriously getting destroyed, and this time it's the Binars. Let's see, they were working on a grap- oh, this was- they had the grappler that they were playing with. That was fun. Let's see.
Oh, okay, the B-plot in this is with, everyone's favorite exocomp, Peanut Hamper, and the malevolent computer, Agamus, who is of course voiced by the always wonderful Jeffrey Combs. And so this is all of the AI back for one fucking, like, ultimate episode. So we got the main plot of Rutherford Mariner fighting it out with Badgie, and they actually break him into multiple different, like, forms. So he has a good version called Goodgy and, like, one Goodgy. Or two others.
I am Logicy, and I think that was it. I think it's just Badgie, Goodgie, and Logicy.
Right.
Badgie, because he's bad, kills Logicy, because he's bad.
But then they do the, Badgie attempts to destroy all Federation ships, but this process gives him omniscience, and he apologizes for his behavior before ascending to a higher state of being. So once again, poking fun at that classic science fiction trope, the one that Stargate would not fucking shut up about, of ascending to a higher plane or of existence. This is also a callback to Lower Deck Season 1, had a person trying to do this. But now it's Badgie, the evil motherfucker, who apologizes as he ascends and floats away. Again, just takes every trope and just throws it on, just turns it on its head. It's so good. But then we have the way...
gotta go to an empty dimension and create a universe now, maybe hang out with the Q Continuum, check out the Black Mountain. He ascends and you can see the stupid koala in the portal. It's just, I love that koala. It seemed like it was going to be a one-off joke in, like, season one, where they have the guy who's the ascender, right? The ascension guy, who actually ascends, and it burns, apparently. Who knows? I see a koala! What does he know? Why is he smiling? But they just keep showing the koala. It's in the opening, like, montage bit. Like,
is
the,
it really?
The,
where?
Yeah. Oh, it's in there. When they do the logo bit.
Yeah.
You know how they have the ship fly around and it makes the Starfleet Delta? Yeah, no. Koala's one of the nebula in the background.
Oh my god, I gotta look for that, because I didn't even notice. Didn't even fucking notice.
Yeah. Yeah, watch for the koala.
Lower Decks, there are a lot of shows that are really good at referencing themselves. Honestly, I already made fun of Stargate once here, but, like, Stargate might be one of the best in terms of tight continuity and constantly referencing itself. Lower Decks is remarkably good at it, at calling back to itself and its own stuff, both subtly and grossly. Like, it's really, oh, it's great. Okay, B plot. Peanut Hamper and Agamus are, like, fall in love during their rehabilitation. Peanut Hamper disappears. Where did she go? And so, of course, then Boingler and Tindy team up with Agamus to try to track down Peanut Hamper. And, of course, in the end, even though Peanut Hamper claims to be rehabilitated, obviously she is not, but she tricks Agamus. I don't know. It's the two... I'm describing this poorly, but...
She claims to be rehabilitated, but she's not. She's going to go off and do one of their schemes, but then decides that actually she's pretty rehabilitated. Ends up on a star base helping her dad. Agamus finds her and is all like, "Well, I don't really want to do schemes either, there as long go. As we're hanging out." Goes back to the Daystrom Institute and is like, "I'm committed to getting better." It's fun. It's wholesome. They have a whole thing where they conquer a planet, and Boimler makes the comment, "Wow, you really did a number out there. No way Starfleet can unwind this in a week."
Oh, man. Thank you for bringing it all back to me. Jesus. I knew that it was a hilarious chase for Peanut Hamper, but I'd forgotten some of how that resolved. Oh. And again, Peanut Hamper's hilarious. Agamus being just voiced by Jeffrey Combs is fucking hilarious. And the whole time you're kind of waiting... Boingler got a one-up on Agamus the first time, so the whole time you're kind of waiting for that to happen again, and when it doesn't, you're just like, oh man, that's great. Okay, and of course
he asked for me by name. Well, kinda. He said the stringy ensign meat pipe who betrayed him. Yes, joke's on him. I'm a lieutenant junior grade meat pipe now. Boimler. Love you.
Okay, we gotta move on. So this ends, though, with Agamus giving them a little bit of intel, showing all the ships have not actually been destroyed. They've been stolen. So again, this is barely a subplot in these episodes, but it is at least building to something. Yep. All right, next episode is Caves. These folks are trapped in a the main quartet are trapped in a cave while on an away mission. So with communication blocked, they recount tales of their previous experiences when having been trapped in caves.
Yeah, it's an anthology episode.
Yeah, but what's the... It's Lower Decks. There's a fucking twist. What is it like? Are all of them... What is the deal? Remind me here.
So they're in a cave, and they get caved in, and they have this carnivorous moss that's slowly consuming the cavern, and they're trying to figure out a way to either... establish communications and get rescued, or avoid the moss and getting eaten. And they're telling each other stories as they go through the process. And it's like, oh, wow, how'd you know how to do that? Oh, well, I learned it when me and Dr. Devana had a baby. Like you do, just kind of casually throwing that out there. And then you got it. You can't just leave that there. You got to tell the whole story. But the twist for the whole episode... Boimler is the first one to tell a story, and he tells the story of being in a cave with a conspiracy theorist who is convinced that everything that's happening to them is a, what was the name of the alien species?
According to this, it is the Vendorians.
The Vendorians. It's a Vendorian morality
test. And that's a TOS reference, right?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's a Vendorian morality test. And in the story, it turns out it actually was Vendorians. They capture Boimler and this conspiracy dude, and conspiracy dude is to be like, oh yeah, I'm your biggest fan. I'm on a few message boards where we share information. And so they charm the Vendorians and have dinner, and ultimately Boimler's like, yeah, I guess you're a crazy conspiracy theorist with dangerous beliefs, but you're not so bad some of the time. I don't know. And Vendorians are like, yay, our enemies to allies gambit worked, and they let them go. That's Boimler's whole thing. They go through, and everybody is telling stories. They eventually get captured by the moss, and they're in the wall, and the moss starts talking. It says, I want to hear the Green One's story. Because this entire time, Tendi had been trying to tell a story, but it's in a turbo lift, not a cave. It's not a cave story. It doesn't count. And she tells it, and it's all wholesome because the whole time they're getting more and more pissed at each other, right? They're going off and doing away missions with other people that's not part of the core group. It's like, oh man, why didn't you tell me about this? I don't know you anymore. And Tendi's like, I remember when we first got like first day on the Cerritos, we got trapped in that turbo lift and like played sock games and stuff, and how much fun that was. And they're like, ah, yeah, I love you guys. We're always gonna be friends. Turns out it was Vendorians controlling the moss the whole time.
Oh.
Oh, everything's Vendorians. Everything's a Vendorian morality test.
And again, TNG and the whole 90s era of Trek, there were so many we got, well, and TOS, Star Trek up until the disco era, right? Such low budgets, they got caught in caves all the fucking time. So all of this is referential against all of Star Trek, the whole we're stuck in a cave, let's have an anthology, a set of bottle episode anthology stories. So fucking classic fucking Trek. Okay, so that brings us to the last two episodes. But before we do that,
what in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about.
All right, dear listener, the QQQ, QQQ, the QQ cast blabbles. It used to be rambles, whatever. Zach, we have gotten everyone addicted to Balatro. Except you? Question mark. Have you taken the plunge to get addicted to the card game that everyone is hooked on? One of us.
I own it, but I haven't had a chance to play it. It's a super busy time. But yes, now I've looked on with envy and lust and have not had a chance to try it out yet.
It's so funny. I think I finally brought Trey around to like deck builder roguelikes because he usually hates that shit. Corey and I have been playing the shit out of this game, but we take turns. We take turns playing together. Trey, according to Steam, now has more playtime than she and I do because we're doing it together. And I'm like, does he have an addictive personality or fucking what? He's like over 90 hours.
Jesus. Jesus.
Yeah, Blatro, that's who we're sponsored by, dear listener. Fucking go give that Canadian dev your freedom dollars, because when it converts to moose bucks, he'll live like a king. It's worth it.
It's true.
All right.
Canada's 25% off.
It's true. Okay, let's do this. Last two episodes, and these are linked together. So, episode 9, The Inner Flight. The mysterious vessel begins targeting former Starfleet officers. So they're trying to figure out, wait a second, why are Starfleet officers getting abducted by this mystery vessel who's been capturing ships? And the Cerritos is assigned to locator, and specifically to protect one of those officers. Who are they supposed to find and protect, Zach?
Were they supposed to find and protect?
Well,
I mean, they're
look
supposed
the
to
same.
Keep...
I don't see it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Locarno. Nick
yes.
Locarno.
So,
he looks nothing like Tom Paris.
I don't see it. So, dear listener, Robert Duncan McNeil played both of these characters, and that is because on TNG, Robert Duncan McNeil shows up as Nick Locarno in the episode The First Duty. And he is, he tries to lie and cover up a shuttle accident effectively. And Wesley's involved. Shut up, Wesley. And so in the end, he is kind of kicked out of Starfleet Academy and leaves in disgrace. Well, the character of Tom Paris on Star Trek Voyager has a very similar backstory. He tried to cover up a shuttle accident. He left Starfleet in disgrace, but he's now going to be like, you know, redeemed as a character played by the same actor. Why would they have different names? Well, the answer is money, because of course it is. Voyager didn't want to pay royalties to the creator of the Nick Locarno character, so they literally just repurposed the same actor and the same character, slapped a new name on him, and Tom Paris literally is, for all intents and purposes, Nick Locarno. So, we are going to save, to find and save Nick Locarno from whatever, the evil mystery ship who's abducting things.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, no, but I mean, the whole time they got to keep Mariner from like getting herself killed because she's taken unnecessary risks. So yeah, that whole bit on the planet with the weather probe that they go and try and fix.
Yeah, so they're trying specifically to keep Mariner out of trouble because again, she's been doing this whole disobedience thing all season. And their shuttle gets destroyed, and so they transport down to a planet, And this planet has all sorts of senior officers from all of the missing ships. So all of those different races we saw the whole season, the Klingons, the Romulans, the Bynar, the Ferengi, whoever else, they're all on this planet. And everyone is stranded there. And everyone's pissed at everyone else because everyone blames everyone else. So in probably the by far the best character growth for the season, Mariner is talking out her feelings with a fucking Klingon, who starts out by calling her a patak and a loser. And then, of course, she gets so pissed but redeems herself. She's like, yeah, and we're going to go fucking fuck all these people up and save the day. And the Klingon's like, no, 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 we're not. That's stupid. Why would you do that? Today's not that good of a day to die.
Yeah, I'm your Chadich. Yeah, no, it's very good. they have the moment where they lure the Klingon ship down to the planet and then jump on top of it to get inside. I'm pretty sure they did that in Voyager. I don't remember exactly.
Did they do it in Voyager? But I don't think so.
It feels like something that Voyager would have done.
I don't know.
Somebody
the
else
Klingons did
on a
show
ship.
Up a couple of times in Voyager, which made no sense, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So they get ready together and go take over a Klingon ship. Guess yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, meanwhile,
they find Locarno's hideout.
Yeah, the B plot is Cerritos finds Locarno's hideout, and they figure out that it is Locarno who built the mystery ship. And so it ends with Mariner getting transported onto Locarno's ship. Dun dun dun! Locarno's been a bad guy. He's been doing this the whole season. Oh no! Played, of course, by Robert Duncan McNeil. All right,
because of course.
Final episode. Old friends, new planets. So this is great because when the Ferengi ship earlier in like episode three or four was getting picked up, the cold open just had these two like kind of Ferengi ensigns arguing about finding stuff in a cargo hold. And one of the things was a Genesis device. So as viewers, you're just thinking this is another Star Trek reference. It's just there because it's funny. It is funny. You don't give it a second thought. Well, guess what? Guess what are the things that freaking Locarno wanted to get his hands on? Genesis device.
Oh, it's a Genesis device. It's like the nuclear warheads of the Star Trek universe.
Basically. So, the classic trope of Locarno knows that Mariner's a rebel and really... And also, retcon-ish. Apparently, Mariner was friends with Locarno and Delta Squad, that includes Wesley, when they were all at the Academy together. So Locarno still considers her a friend. She used to look up to him. And so he wants her to join her. And building a new fleet of non-Starfleet people, which might have been stealing all the ships or something like that.
They're part of the first totally independent, unaligned fleet in the Alpha Quadrant. the Maquis would like a word.
Oh, God, so many fucking good lines in this goddamn show.
Right.
Yeah, so they're hidden behind a giant force field that the Federation can't get into. The only way to get into it is maybe with a giant Orion battleship. How the fuck could they get one of those?
Well, you got to fight for it because it's Orion's. It was such a good plan because they chose their champions, and the big burly Orion champion that they picked, Tendi's like, Miglimo, you're gonna be the one to save us, skinny little scared Miglimo. Because of course this is Tendi's turf. You gotta trust Tendi. She knew that big burly Orion champion had terrible allergies. Miglimo, flop ear down. I can't. It's embarrassing. Flop ear down.
But shocking twist. What happens when the damn thing passes out from the allergies?
Well, Miglimo does end up fucking it up. He loses. They end up making a trade that, they'll get the battleship. It's in terrible condition. Nobody said anything about what condition it was supposed to be in. But the condition of the deal is that Tendi would return to Orion to take up her place in the winter constellation or whatever it was.
Yep. So action shenanigans ensue. They get through the shield. At the very last second, of course, Mariner is saved. And just like Wrath of Khan, Locarno is left with the Genesis device, can't disarm it. So, boom, new planet.
they put a paywall on a bomb? Stupid Ferengi.
Oh, fuck, I'd forgotten that bit. Yeah, and so, yes, the season ends with the heartfelt. Talin declines the invitation to return to Vulcan. She's going to stay aboard the Cerritos. But then Tindy has to go back to Orion.
Yep.
So cliffhanger, sure, one of our main quartet theoretically might be leaving the show. Now, by the way, Zach, don't fucking spoil that for me, because I have not looked into the cast or whether or not she will return. I'm assuming she will, but shut the fuck up and don't tell me. As we've spoiled
I really truly don't know, but I do remember the way that she turned around and smiled and put on her little headband after warping away from the Cerritos on the Orion ship. Whether that's just like Tindy being Tindy and adapting to circumstances and getting into, you know, the new role, or whether it's some kind of nefarious plot. Because her whole thing with respect to being an Orion in Starfleet is she has rejected the nefarious traditions of her people and the stereotypes that go along with them, and has dedicated herself to science and exploration. Or has she? Is the question that last scene asks.
Dun, dun,
so,
dun.
It's going to be really fun to see resolve, I think. Who knows what the season arc for season 5 is going to be. They really don't have anything other than Tindy to hook onto, yeah. And who knows if that's going to be the whole thing or what.
Yeah, but again, I've appreciated that basically they've just had this kind of like one subplot per season that isn't really, it is not the driving force behind the season. The way that Disco, whenever they have a MacGuffin per season, that MacGuffin is the driving force, right? We're going to find, like, the 5 lights or whatever the fuck it was. There are 4 lights in season 2.
Yes.
They have... Oh, I didn't watch enough Disco. But they have a MacGuffin every season that actually is driving the plot. I like that Lower Decks is completely episodic, but it just sprinkles in little things that then come together at the end of the season. And, I mean, I gotta tell you, man, maybe it's pure nostalgia, but... That is what a lot of 90s sci-fi did, because they, or 90s shows in general, because they couldn't afford to be serial storytelling, right? Like, what's the term when you, syndicated television could air out of order. So they, for the fans, they would just do the little things that would add up for the cliffhangers and the season finales. And I don't know, man, I like that pacing. I like to not be, like,
yeah.
Lower Decks, you can throw on any fucking episode and watch any episode and have a fucking hilarious laugh out time, but it still
and
has something for the season. Yeah, and you do.
Yep.
No shit, mister. I could quote every fucking episode sold it thing.
Well, I mean, in fairness, I am using a cheat box, but, you know.
Son of a bitch. Here, I was impressed.
Well,
fuck
you should
you.
Be, because most of these things I was looking up the specific verbiage for. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm right there with you. I think they did a really good job with, you know, having a theme for the season without making it a whole story. And that's satisfying, because they got to do so much more when they're not tied down to one plot.
Oh yeah. They can just go anywhere and do anything they want to do. It's fucking great. Mm-hmm. So Lower Decks, seriously, I think I've said this before, aside from the first 2 episodes, I've loved everything about the series. I think basically it takes 4 episodes for the series to get fully up to speed. And then after like 4 episodes, it just never fucking stops. It never slows down.
Yeah.
It only gets better.
No, they grew the beard real quick.
Oh, God,
it was
yeah.
nice.
And, yeah, man, again, I just keep thinking about the creator's quote of, like, every season was a gift. It's been great. I cannot wait for the 5th season. What a wonderful show this has been. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was another thing that I was thinking of, though. Like, just the way that those little nuggets were sort of scattered around through all of the episodes. Somebody was talking about, what if you had the structure for a story be almost entirely filler episodes, right? Every episode is just basically does nothing to advance the overall plot, but sets up little things throughout the storytelling until they all pay off right at the end.
Like
that's
all,
basically what you've got with
all of my
Lower Decks.
All of my favorite fucking sci-fi. Yes, basically.
Yeah, they call it Chekhov's firing squad because all the guns go off at once.
I'm cool with this.
I love the idea And yeah, absolutely works. Chekhov's firing squad.
Oh, fucking great. All right, let's move on to a few things and then get out of here. Let's see. Where's my damn button?
Good news, everyone. Great news, everyone. Bad news, everyone.
Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of that.
You are?
So, I did save some news headlines here. Let's see here. What the fuck did I put in this list? Okay, so this is all random horseshit that, once again, like always on the show, doesn't matter. Dude, so, you know, we love to make fun of Fortnite because of all the weird crossovers they do. But, you know, at least those are fun and cheeky and kooky. Call of Duty does some shit that I do not understand. Zach, who is coming to Call of Duty?
Cheech and Chong.
Cheech.
Jesus.
And fucking Chong.
Yeah.
Look, they were pioneers of their time. You know, basically like, hey guys, we smoke weed. Wink, wink. Wow. How is the, who the fuck is asking for Cheech and Chong to appear in fucking Call of Duty? What is this? I don't understand.
Know, man. They've been kind of off the rails for a while. I mean, for a while. One of the most popular modes in, what was it, Modern Warfare 3 or 2 or whatever it was the zombie mode, where it's just absolutely bizarre shit. And it's a very fun game mode because it plays super well, and it doesn't constrain itself to making sense. But they kind of took that lesson and ran with it a little bit. They slowly gotten away from needing to be this like gritty, hard ass military shooter. And they've sort of, I'm going to use the word evolved. I don't really mean it in a positive way.
In a positive way.
And they haven't devolved because they're still moving forward, but they've erred more on the side of being fun than being like accurate. Or, you know, hard and dark and whatever. And I don't hate that philosophy. Yeah. So.
No, I mean, like, I can totally get behind.
It's not my personal cup of tea, but yeah, I get it.
Why do you
see? I was trying to load a fucking page in the background, and of course it starts autoplaying.
Of course it does.
Yeah, no, I can totally get behind them just wanting to have a bit more fun rather than just be super serious. Also, what do you do? How do you be super serious in a fucking warfare shooter, especially with the state of the world right now? I just still think Cheech and Chong as the choice is just kind of old and bizarre. I mean, I would probably be more entertained if they brought back Sanford and Son, and every time you died, he just grabs his chest. I'm coming, Elizabeth! I'm coming again! And if you got that joke, goddamn, you are older than us.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a single boomer that listens to the show. Oh, man.
It's dark, because didn't he actually die doing that?
Oh, he may have died of a heart attack, actually. Yeah, I don't know.
And I'm pretty sure that was basically what he said. Oh, I'm coming home, Lord. Something to that effect.
So
anyway. What else we got?
I don't have a lot of news in here. I don't even know what the context of this is. I just thought it was funny, so I put it in here. Ryan Gosling and Mike Day attended the Fall Guy premiere dressed as Beavis and Butthead. And admittedly, Ryan Gosling dressed as Beavis is fucking hilarious. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I had to put that headline. Not that I didn't watch the SNL bit. I don't even know anything about The Fall Guy. Isn't that a remake of something?
I don't know.
It was just a funny headline I had to put in there. Yeah, I don't really
have jack shit for
news or trailers, man.
Did you see the sparkles, the Boston Dynamics sparkles?
You put a link in here. Dear God, what am I looking at?
Well, I mean, I put a link in a picture.
Yes.
But yes, it's a little YouTube video.
Okay, hold on. We'll share this. 1 sec.
Like, it's a minute long. It's fine.
Oh, of course, that time it doesn't fucking autoplay. What the hell? Where are you, Zoom? Let me share my screen. Damn it. All right, here we go.
Yeah. So, Boston Dynamics dressed up Spot in a furry costume. It's a blue dog. It's kind of adorable, but you can see the
wow.
Fucking anatomy isn't right. Like, the dog's head and neck are attached to a robotic arm that
and
has
the legs
its center
are
like
backwards.
In the middle of the back, and the legs are backwards.
Oh my god,
so
they're dancing.
They are dancing. It's all fun and games until the dog's head's sticks 4 feet out in front of it in order to get the treat in your hand. That guy will get cookies off the top of the fridge without lifting any paws.
This is uncanny, dude. That is... It is adorable, but almost terrifying when you actually think about it. When you get some conscious thought, it's like, what the fuck am I looking at?
They're having fun, but it reminded me so much of Tendy's dog. Do you remember Tendy's dog? We were just talking about Lower Decks.
Yeah, it turns into like the beast thing or whatever.
She genetically created an artificial life dog. Knows nothing about dogs. Just what do you mean dogs can't climb on the ceiling? Of course they can. anyway, yeah, that was it. I got nothing else.
No, I got no other news. I don't even have a trailer. Do you know of any trailers that came out or?
No, not really. We already watched the Deadpool one. There hasn't really been anything else that has grabbed me. So
yeah, same here. Well, all right. I think we talked Star Trek straight enough. I guess we can wrap it here. All right, Zach, think of a not One Winged Angel song for us to go out on, please. Okay, try, please.
Fuck, man.
Hey, dear listener, thank you so very much for joining us. Please always remember that any and all views expressed on the podcast are representative solely of the person expressing them, not of their friends, family, co-hosts, or co-workers, and certainly not of their employers, past, present, or future. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for respecting our individuality. Zach, that's all the time you got. What are we going out on? Don't make
game
me...
over, Ozma.
Hey, wow, that's a fucking good call. All right, good stuff. I actually listened to Ozma recently. I forget why, but I was making Corey listen to it. She was like, yeah, this is okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's solidly okay.
All right, man. Well, hey, I'm here next week. I think you said Ruli's still out, but are you back next week?
Should be.
All right. Hey, dude, okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to spoil something. I usually never do this, all right? But I'm going to spoil this in advance. The next time we get the three of us together, the topic that I want to talk about, and this is a really fucking good one. It sparked some amazing conversations with my friends. What really stuck the landing? As in, what ending from show, book, movie is just next level amazing? Maybe it just ties everything up together in a way you didn't think possible. Maybe it recontextualizes the story. But we're talking not just good endings. Maybe not even just great endings, but transcendent, incredible endings. So I want you to think about that. I want you to come with your best fucking answers. In whatever, 2 weeks, whenever you get back there.
Yeah, no, I need the 2 weeks. I'm having a hard time thinking of anything that's just, like, better than bad.
Well, you let that percolate, you ruminate, and we'll be back next week to, I don't know, talk Star Trek or some shit. I don't fucking know. All right, dear listener. QQ. Oh, this podcast is overrated. That's not true. There's no ratings on iTunes, like one. Go leave us the ratings.
5 stars, according to my mom. I'm frustrated. Is that a reason to look
for a brother? That's it. I'm getting out of here.